jury's like, oh, snap, a twist. Like, they love twists. Any great trial has a twist.
I suggest that we give him 10 years in Leavenworth or 11 years in Smallworth.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take 5 and 10 in Woolworth.
Like this, Mr. Court.
Address the judge as your honor.
Well, it was like this, my honor.
Your honor, not my honor.
Why? Don't you like him?
You're meant to come down here and defend me against these characters, and the only one I've got on my side is the blood-sucking lawyer.
Welcome to Opening Arguments, the podcast that pairs an inquisitive interviewer with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 318. I'm Thomas. That's Andrew. How are you doing, Andrew?
I am doing fantastic, Thomas. I think I said earlier on Twitter, right? Like, I've had some good days in my life, you know, the birth of my child, the my honeymoon, the trip we took to Australia, right? Today is way up there with those days.
Because
how are you doing?
We are finally going to be doing the eminent domain deep dive.
Yeah, that's yes. Right. Oh, and I've got a long segment on baseball law.
No. Yeah. Oh, hold on. I just checked, Andrew, the news. It says all the news, maximum news. Actually, Google News just says maximum. It's full.
Yeah. Yeah, my Google alerts just decided to merge into one, a la the Constructicons forming Devastator, and they shot me with the eye lasers. And yeah, I wish I could show you. I have this like 17-ounce. In addition to my delightful Opening Arguments mug, which I use when I need regular coffee, I also have a like. It's basically an oil drum with a handle on it. And I have been mainlining coffee, trying to keep up with everything.
You are Optimus Prime, so you do just drink oil out of it, actually.
Yes. Well, yeah, that too.
Wow.
Today's lots a pretty to big to. Deal.
Lots to get to, little housekeeping. We're probably going to go long on this one because there's so much to get to. Andrew sent me a manifesto that he wrote. Of his notes, and it's long. Here's what we're going to do. We want to, we're going to give you all the good stuff we can in this episode, and then we'll probably end up going extra for patrons because we love our patrons, and it'll be a chance to get our patrons some extra good stuff. So if you want to take part in that, you know how to do it. Go to patreon.com/law, pledge as little as a dollar, and you get all the bonus extra, but we truly are not going to be able to fit it all in, but just wait. There's more. That's not all. We're not going to try. We're 100% getting patrons Tuesday show early because we also plan on doing an impeachment guide, an impeachment deep dive that we need right now to inform us about what's going on now. And we will get that out to patrons early. We love our patrons so much that in this great time of need, in this time when all the Trump news is happening, we are going to get you a bunch of extra stuff, and we're going to get you that stuff early. So that's our thanks to you. And I think that's the agenda. Did I miss anything on the housekeeping?
No, the only thing I would add is I also want to share out, we do this, we have a newsletter level of patrons, where from time to time I'll put up my show notes or other, you know, kind of direct communications. I have 13 single spaced pages of research here that, I do want to share with everybody. So all of our patrons at any level, will also get my, show notes from this episode, which are uncensored, which don't have clown horns in them, and which document everything that went into this episode.
Would you say they're a transcript, or would you say they are a memorandum of your...
Well, that is going to be issue number one, so why don't we...
But before we get to that, I do just... I'm sorry, apologies, I got to do a little live show update, but live show in LA, October 12th. A couple things. We keep getting a bunch of questions that I think it would be worth answering. If you're thinking about buying tickets, but like maybe you're just by yourself, we've got a lot of messages from people who are like, hey... I'm by myself. Like, I don't know if I want, you know, for the VIP or for the platinum, how, you know, weird is it to just kind of come by myself? Totally fine. It is absolutely a welcoming, fun place. A lot of people are talking about how, hey, I maybe have a little social anxiety. From my understanding of how everything has gone in the past and how the last event went, I think everybody was more than welcome. We had a good time. It's a low pressure, fun environment that you can kind of participate and talk with us as much or as little as you want. So absolutely do not worry if that is you. Feel free to come along. It'll be a ton of fun, I promise. And then the one other note I'll say is there's currently only one platinum ticket left. If there is a couple out there who was planning to come to platinum, but it was like, oh no, there's only one left now, you can feel free to message me and we can free one up. For you, if that's going to be the make or break, because it's an odd number of people bought tickets. So we just want to make sure that if there's a couple that was, you know, going to come that, you know, now can't because there's only one ticket. We don't want that to stop you. We can make room at the table for one more person. You know, it might be it'll be one of those awkward chairs and like a weird leaf of the table, but we'll figure it out.
Sure, I can cook more. Why not? Just add another five courses on to what I've got to do. No. I would love that.
I absolutely made this decision unilaterally, but I stand by it.
I will be the one who's a, you know, mess in the kitchen trying to get everything together. Yeah. But no, I'm very excited about it.
Okay, so that's a little announcement. That's almost sold out. But by the way, VIP tickets, still plenty of those available. And that was a ton of fun last time. A hangout with us after the show for hours. We talked, we hung out, we had fun. So LA folks and anybody conceivably in the near area, because we're not coming back to this area for who knows when, come to the show October 12th. Okay, that said, it's time to get to the show of all shows. Approaching the upper stratosphere of Yodel Mountain, possibly with a view of the peak of Yodel Mountain. So Brian, hit it with the Yodel Mountain.
Because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
Nobody, so you're not aware of any context during the course of the election?
How many times do I have to answer this question?
Can you just say
Russia
yes or no
is
on
a
it?
Ruse. Yeah, I know you have to get up and ask a question so important. Russia is a ruse.
Well, I'm not a crook.
Okay, Andrew, you just go. I don't want to. There's so much. So, just go.
Let me give you kind of the top line summary first, because I don't want us to get so caught up in the details that we're not giving people the kind of digestible 30 seconds out of everything we know as of 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Thursday, September 26th, 2019. Here's what we know, and here's the big deal. Acting Director of National Intelligence Joseph McGuire. I keep wanting to call him Tobey Maguire. If I do that in this show, forgive me. Spider-Man testified today.
I'm pretty surprised you didn't go Mark McGuire, given your baseball.
Oh,
law.
Yeah. Well, because it's not spelled like Mark McGuire. Oh, okay. So it's spelled exactly like Tobey Maguire. Oh. So Spider-Man today, 100%. Changed his story. Nobody in the news media is really carrying it this way. And I had a little bit of a back and forth with Tarn Somerville on Twitter, who engaged in good faith. And so I want to explain this as clearly as I can, because it's really, really obvious to me. I don't want to oversell it. In our bonus episode, we included the transcripts to counsel for Acting Director of National Intelligence, who wrote the excuses back to Adam Schiff as to why the whistleblower complaint was not being forwarded to Congress and why McGuire was not planning to testify before the House Intelligence Committee, which they eventually worked out would be this morning. Those letters are unambiguous in my view. So I'm gonna read you, for example, from this is page 3 of the September 13th letter, which says, "We do not understand the statute to require the Director of National Intelligence automatically to forward every complaint to Congress, even where the complaint falls outside the plain terms of the underlying statutory procedures. We do not understand the statute to foreclose the DNI from reviewing information in such complaints and withholding confidential executive branch information." That is the only reference, put a pin in that, that is the only reference in both letters to the executive branch and to confidential information. Instead, what these letters say, and I'm going to read the most recent, which was the September 17th letter, which purports to summarize the reasons for not disclosing the initial letter, purports to summarize the findings of the September 13th letter, right? So it says, "We reiterate the full explanation provided in our September 13th letter, which I attach here too. The complaint," this is from page 2 of the September 17th letter, "the complaint forwarded to the ICIG, the Intelligence Community Inspector General, does not meet the definition of urgent concern under the statute. That definition concerns serious allegations related to, quote, the funding, administration, or operation of an intelligence activity within the responsibility and authority," end quote, "of the DNI. This complaint, however, concerned conduct by someone outside the intelligence community and did not relate to any, quote, intelligence activity under the DNI's supervision. Because the complaint was determined not to be a, quote, urgent concern, the law did not require that DNI forward the complaint to the intelligence committees." So that was their excuse last week. DNI gets to review. He reviewed, determined that this was outside the scope and therefore not an urgent concern. That's why we didn't give it to you.
Which was that all statement. BS, by the way, and you covered that.
Yeah, right. And we covered in our bonus episode, yeah. 316 and a half, that that's not the law, right? So that excuse is nonsense to begin with. Today, we learned that excuse is not true. Today, and I said recant, and I take Tarn's position. And so, you know, I want to be clear here because I like being clear.
I'm going to allow you to be clear. I'm going to go ahead and make an exception just this once. Go ahead and
be clear. That.
Actually, totally clear.
To me, the primary excuse given today by acting DNI McGuire was executive privilege. We're going to break that down. In my view, I read you the only sentence that obliquely referenced executive privilege, and then I just read you the excuse given by McGuire's lawyer on September 17th. That does not say, it would have been very easy to say, we did not forward this complaint because it contained matters that were subject to executive privilege. If they had said that, right, the letter would have been received very differently, right? And they didn't say that. They are advancing that position. McGuire is advancing that position for the first time in the hearing today. Now, that position is also nonsense. You need to know that.
But is it the kind of nonsense where they can get away with it for a few more minutes?
Nope.
Oh, okay. It sounds like it's a better excuse in some ways because they've changed their story to it, right? Or you don't think so?
I don't know if it's a better excuse, oh, right? Okay. If you go to the statute, and we will include that link in the show notes, that is 50 U.S.C. section 3033, and it's subsection K5. And we talked about this in the bonus episode, and it describes in subsections K5, A, B, and C exactly what happened, which is an employee whistleblower who intends to report to Congress a complaint or information with respect to an urgent concern may report such complaint to the inspector general. Then the inspector general has 14 days, shall determine whether the complaint or information appears credible. Upon making such a determination, he shall transmit to the Director of National Intelligence a notice that the determination of that determination together with the complaint. And then C, upon receipt from such a transmittal, the Inspector General shall, within 7 days, forward that transmittal to the intelligence committees, together with any comments the director considers appropriate, right? So you get to annotate, but you shall pass it along. That contains zero exceptions for matters that are attorney-client privileged or covered by executive privilege or covered by urgent aspects of national security, right? Contain confidential information, all of that, because they are being transmitted confidentially.
Not to Congress behind closed doors, right?
Exactly right. And so those are precisely the people that are entitled to hear matters of confidential national intelligence, that are entitled to hear matters of executive privilege, right? It does not. The whole point of this statute is to circumvent the whistleblower going directly to the press. So 100% of this excuse not only is pretextual, not only was it not advanced a week ago, but not covered by the statute. That's the takeaway. That's what you need to be saying back to Aunt Kathy and your Fox News watching uncle. We're going to try to
explain this to Aunt Kathy. No, you see, it's going to behind a closed door. Oh, never mind. You just hate liberals. That's all you.
Well, we are triggered.
Yeah.
But no, look, that's the takeaway, that the excuses for failure to transmit this complaint have crumbled. The complaint is now the unredacted complaint. Acting DNI McGuire confirmed that the unredacted complaint is in the possession of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees. The redacted complaint, which is, oh my gosh, we're going to get through how bad this is in our hands. We know this information, and this is, as you are going to hear, a blueprint for impeaching the president of the United States.
So just to make sure I have this all, we have access to the redacted complaint. Congress has the unredacted complaint. Hopefully we'll hear more later, or is it just there's secrets involved or something? So we won't.
Yeah, no, it this complaint, the ICIG, again, Trump appointee, right, was super smart here. The narrative. Wait,
the guy
portion,
who held it back?
No.
No, oh, the guy acting who forwarded it to the
DNI, right, yeah.
Right.
The acting DNI McGuire held it back. The ICIG, also a Trump appointee, super smart here.
Smart enough to be like, this is bad, and I'm going to make sure that I cover my butt when it comes out.
And we're going to go through that.
Okay.
The complaint is 7 pages long in narrative form, and we're going to talk about the highlights and lowlights. It segregates out anything that relies on potentially classified information into a classified appendix. So it says up front, hey, I've segregated out all the classified information. So if Bill Barr goes through and redacts this.
I remember when Bill Barr did some selective editing. Not today. Not going to let that happen.
And lest you think I am being facetious here, I'm going to read. This is the top of page 2. We've already uploaded it to our site. You can read it. Read along with us. Quote, to the best of my knowledge, the entirety of this statement is unclassified when separated from the classified enclosure. I have endeavored to apply the classification standards outlined in Executive Order 13526 and to separate information that I know or have reason to believe is classified for national security purposes. And so as a result, the entire 7-page narrative here is unredacted.
Wow.
The portions in the, it's brilliant. The portions in the attachment that are redacted, again, I don't know what they contain because they're redacted, but I have every reason to believe that these redactions are legitimate, right? Like, and look, again, I want our intelligence community to be able to redact sensitive information, right? Like that's kind of an important thing, no matter how important transparency and good government is. I don't.
But we also don't have to worry about harm to ongoing matter either.
Right.
Because it should involve any of that. Oh my gosh. This is, I see why this is a good day for you.
Yeah.
when you see one Trump appointees acting like this, you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. One more. And this is all, I have 7 items to cover. This is all not on the non-enumerated.
This is all small I or whatever. Like,
yeah. What, one more important thing here. If they're pinning their hopes on executive privilege, as we will soon find out, the linchpin, the key actor in all of this is insane person Rudy Giuliani, who is not an executive branch employee. He is not acting at the bequest of the United States government. He is the president's personal lawyer and fixer and nightmare fuel. And he's not covered by executive privilege. 100%. Absolutely not. And on top of it, anything that relates to the crime fraud exception, he's not covered by attorney-client privilege either, right? That's what brought down Michael Cohen. Advancing the president's electoral political interests around the world is not something for which you get to claim attorney-client privilege. So they've morphed their argument to privilege, and their privilege argument sucks. So that's your top line.
Awesome. Quick thing, and I hope you can answer this in a couple words or less, because we haven't gotten to item one on your agenda. So this guy who held back this thing, and it's totally bogus reasons, and we all know that because we all listen to opening arguments, but he has released it, so there's no consequences for that? Is it the kind of thing where, like, okay, yes, he held on to it for however long it was, a week or something, but and it was totally bogus, his reasons were totally bogus, but he did it, so now there's no punishment or consequences or anything. Is that how it
Yeah, works? And let me say this. You saw the treatment of Maguire, and to be honest, my views on Maguire morph over the course of his 3 hours of testimony before the House Intelligence Committee today. When it began, I wasn't sure, right? I mean, we said in our bonus episode that he was a complete cipher. That remains the case, but I'm convinced he's not a Trump hack. Right. He's a career Navy guy. Is he a lifelong Republican? Yeah. Did he run to the president when this complaint came before his office? He did. Again, I'm not endorsing his behavior in holding it back. Neither is Adam Schiff, neither are the House Democrats on the Intelligence Committee. But he's not Bill Barr. That came out loud and clear. And we're going to talk about that. I think this is somebody who, right, was on the job literally for like a week when this came to his desk and was sort of like, okay, I don't know what to do, right? Like, I'm a career Navy intelligence guy.
Well, did you catch, though, there was Washington Post reporting that was like he was going to resign over being forced to keep this quiet. And then Trump, in his rambling speech that I can't believe I watched a lot of about the UN General Assembly, he said, like, oh, that was totally fake news. I have a quote here. This guy said, no, I wasn't ever going to resign. I don't ever quit anything. So did you catch any of that? Is that all?
Yeah, he was asked that today and confirmed the Trump interpretation of that. Okay. Said, no, I never threatened to resign over this. Would be interesting if we find evidence to the contrary. But again, I found Maguire credible. Okay. And we're going to talk about that.
All right.
But so there we go. That's your answer on that question.
Okay, that's our pre-show announcement. Come to the live show, link in the show notes. Now let's get to item one on your agenda.
Yeah.
And that item is regarding transcripts. Of course, Andrew Torres would lead us off with a fascinating diatribe about what is technically a transcript or not. There's a lot of argument about this. I know you on Twitter were talking about, and you were making use of our wonderful transcriptionist to talk about it, whether it made sense if the transcript would only be however many pages it was, because it should have been longer based on the call times. Tell us about Telcon and what it actually was, whether this was a transcript or a memorandum or neither. I guess it has to be one.
Look, the White House referred to this as a transcript. I adopted their language, and, you know, 87,000 people said, hey, not so fast. This is a summary, and it could be Bill Bard. And ordinarily, you know, I would say, oh, you know, oh, come on. And let me be clear, a telcon, T-E-L-C-O-N, capital letters, that just stands for telephone conversation, and it is an abbreviation used in the intelligence community for these sorts of transcripts. It has a disclaimer on it that says, look, this might not be verbatim, but, you know, this is being these are contemporaneous notes made of a phone call. In any normal situation, you would have no reason to doubt that that was 99%+ of a transcript. Well, you're not in a normal situation. So let me kind of talk about that a little bit. I asked our transcriptionist, Heather Loveridge, our ace transcriptionist, who puts up transcriptions of this show. Head on over to openargs.com and you can read that. And I said, look, this transcript is 5 pages long. That doesn't look like, and it says it was a half an hour conversation. That kind of feels like it is not complete. And the transcript internally has several ellipses in it. And again, as we know from Bill Barr, right, like ellipses can mean I'm, you know, omitting all the good stuff.
However, we are talking about Donald Trump. And I guess I'll ask the question, could these ellipses be, and remember when I won the Electoral College, it was a total blowout. They never said anyone else could win that many votes. And it was the most vote. And, you know, and the transcriptionist people or whoever's listening is just like, all right, the usual diatribe about how I'm so great, blah, blah, blah.
It absolutely could. And look, I don't want, again, I referred to the thing as a transcript, right? Like I accepted the White House language. I think until proven otherwise, we ought to assume that it fairly reflects the content of the phone call because it's really bad by itself, right? Like this is not like the Barr letter that, you know, the transcript is real bad. And now that we have the whistleblower's complaint, we can line those two up. And on page 3, the whistleblower says, quote, based on my understanding, there were approximately a dozen White House officials who listened to that July 25th call. A mixture of policy officials and duty officers in the White House Situation Room, as is customary. The officials I spoke with told me that participation in the call had not been restricted in advance because everyone expected it would be a, quote, routine call with a foreign leader. Right. I mean, think about what that means, right? Like, it means that Trump is so used to his mafia way of conducting business that as he's about to bribe a foreign leader, he doesn't think, oh man, I should probably do this without people around me.
Yep. Like, no. I have said this from the beginning. I never thought that Trump was a Putin spy, but I do think that he has no sense of the law and doesn't care about the law. And just by just odds wise, the odds were there was going to be enough in the Mueller report of him just not even knowing or caring and just doing what he wants to do and breaking the law because there are some restrictions on what a president can do. And he has had no restrictions or consequences placed on him his entire life. So he has complete disregard for anything like the law and just doesn't care. And so naturally would just be like, yeah, everyone listen in. I'm about to break the law. It's cool.
Check this out. And as you read the transcript, and I had some portions I was going to read to you. We're already a half hour in, so I'm going to elide over it. You can read the transcript. What this instantly reminded me of was the James Comey's testimony when he was fired, right? And that was, and we got the idiotic spectacle of Republicans in Congress going, what? He just said, I hope. Like, I hope doesn't mean that he was threatening. And you read it, and it read like a mob boss saying, well, you know, I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He's a good guy. I sure hope you can let that go. Like, we all know, and that's a direct quote. We all knew what that meant when he fired Comey. And the proof was that he fired Comey when Comey didn't let it go, right? So we know how this president talks.
He was
just
very disappointed in how Comey handled Hillary's, was it?
You know, well, excuse? I don't
even remember the BS excuse. But
well, but remember he first conceded to Don Lemon on CNN?
I fired him because of Russia. It was Russia. I did it. Impeach me. And then everyone's like, he's joking, though.
Yeah, right. So you read this conversation that the president of the United States has with the president, the just elected president of Ukraine, a a world leader necessary to that is at war with a hostile foreign power to the United States. And we're going to talk more about Ukraine on our Tuesday episode. It is really, really important that everybody understand just how gross a dereliction of duty this is, just how how treasonous in the small t, right? Not the criminal offense of treason, but how colloquially treasonous this is. You read this conversation, it is gross and disgusting. It is a world leader asking the president of the United States and the president being like, yeah, that's great, but you got to do me a favor first.
Yeah.
And that's almost a direct
quote. $320 million that I've, guess there's a problem in transmitting that to you. I'd love to free it up for you. Definitely going to do that.
Yeah. Hey, you just got to talk to my people.
Do me a favor.
Yeah. It's gross. And that will be evidence of corrupt intent. Those are the same line of cases that we talked about with Comey, right? U.S. versus Bedoy and U.S. versus McDonald.
Sorry, I cannot take that any other way of this is so obvious that like this is a lawyer joke to be like, yeah, it's from the case U.S. versus Bedoy. Like, of course, this is corrupt intent. But you're telling me that's a real...
The case of the universe versus duh. Oh, man. I'm going to look through to see if...
I thought that was one of those lawyer jokes that, like, lawyers
think it's Arthur Duh was ever arrested. Yeah. So there we go. That's the difference between telcon and a transcript. I think we should give the White House the benefit of the doubt on this until proven otherwise. And if there is an otherwise, if this has been Bill Barr, there are a dozen people out there that will be able to contradict
it. Well, you talk about those dozen
people. There's additional information. Go ahead.
You talk about those dozen people, but it just occurs to me. Let's say that we go through all this and it's widely established, which we all know, but you know, whatever. It's widely established that this was horrible, unethical, like you said, small t treasonous, impeachable behavior. Is there any implication on the 12 people that heard it and were like, okay? And then the one whistleblower was like, hey, this is not okay. Does that, I mean, are they guilty of anything? Do they have the right to just be like, well, we all heard that and it was crimey. It was definitely full of crime, but we're going to not tell anybody. You know, like, is that okay? Can they?
That's a super complicated question, and it turns on exactly what they heard and whether they could be charged as co-conspirators in the crime. Because certainly there are when you get to the law of conspiracy, right? You can be a conspirator before the fact. You're somebody that got together with the president and said, "Okay, we're going to do that." Right? Bill Barr, conspirator before the fact.
Let me just pause you right there. That's all under the understanding that this would be an actual crime and not just an impeachable offense, right?
Right. And we're going to talk about what actual crimes were committed here.
Oh, okay.
You can also be a conspirator after the fact, right? Like, so your buddy is in a gang and the gang, but you're not in the gang, right? The gang decides to pull off a bank robbery and then your buddy, unbeknownst to you, you know, Pulp Fiction, right? Like Jules and Vincent show up at your, you know, Valley apartment and are like, hey, Quentin Tarantino, I need you to, you know, put us up and help us clean the car. You weren't a part of the initial conspiracy, but you're now a conspirator after the fact, right? Like you recognize when somebody shows up with a car full of blood and asks you to help clean it and to, you know, hide them out for a little bit, that you are participating in the criminal enterprise after the fact. I doubt, by the way, that there will be an affirmative obligation on these 12 folks. But that's the analysis that you would use.
But I mean, you would hope that professionally everybody would be like, oh, these are garbage people who don't care or report it when the president does an impeachable thing. So their career should be over. But we know that won't happen.
And look, let's add, I want one more defense of these folks. And I reserve the right to take the garbage person approach later on. But we saw the direct aftermath, literally 5 minutes before we started recording. The president gave a speech in which he said, in which he attacked the whistleblower himself, called him a spy and said, well, you know, we used to have ways of dealing with spies. So this is a thug in office. And I get the idea that people around him, particularly people who are...
Yeah, but if that were the excuse, yeah. I'd agree with you, but it's not the excuse. They're protecting him because they want to be in power and he's the ticket to power.
I hear you. But, you know, when you have that level of corruption at the top of, you know, well, it sure ain't to have something happen to you, I have some sympathy. So we'll know more as things unfold.
Yeah, I'm keeping an eye on news alerts just in case anything drops. Just while we're talking about that whistleblower, New York Times alert here. Whistleblower is said to be a CIA officer who was assigned to work at the White House. His complaint suggests he is a trained analyst. Interesting. So that's what we have on him so far. All right. With that said, we've got to take a quick break and we will be right back with item 2 of 7. Opening Arguments is brought to you by Quip. What actually makes a better toothbrush? Industrial strength, power, claims of miraculous trendy ingredients, multiple modes. Well, if you ask your dentist, they'll tell you it's less about the brush and more about how you use it. That's why Quip was created by dentists and product designers to focus on what actually matters for your oral health, healthier habits. Quip is great, folks. They have sensitive vibrations with built-in timer, which is my favorite part, by the way, to guide a gentle brushing for dentist-recommended 2 minutes with 30-second pulses, ensuring an even clean. This is the best thing for me because if you're anything like me, if left to my own devices, I'd brush my lower quadrant for a minute. I'd brush that one for a while. Probably like 10 seconds. And then the next part I'd go to, I'd space out and probably brush until my teeth disappear. And I'd brush for like 10 minutes. And then I'd remember. And then I'd do the last two quadrants in about 4 seconds apiece. That's if left to my own devices. But fortunately, I'm not left to my own devices. I've got Quip's sensitive vibrations with the built-in timer. Also, Quip automatically delivers brush heads to you every 3 months for clean new bristles right on schedule. Again, something I need help with because I wouldn't probably forget and never replace mine, but they send it to me. It's so great. The sleek, intuitive design is simple to use and comes with a travel cap that doubles as a mirror mount. These thoughtful features make brushing something you actually want to do twice every day. Good habits matter to live a healthier life, so help form fresh oral health habits with Quip. Quip starts at just $25, and you'll get your first refill free at getquip.com/OA. This is a simple way to support our show and start brushing better at the same time, but you have to go to getquip.com, that's getquip.com/OA, to get your first refill free. Go right now to getquip.com/OA. Here we go with item 2. Apparently item 2 is, are we at peak Yodel Mountain? Well, I think peak Yodel Mountain is Trump's been impeached and actually convicted. Right?
To me, peak Yodel Mountain is career Republican breaks with Donald Trump. Right. And I've pegged that on a couple of different people. Bill Burr from North Carolina in the Senate. We'll have to look. We're not there yet. But there are some really, really positive signs of where we are. Right. Obviously, Nancy Pelosi immediately doing an about face. And the report was that that she did that pending receipt of information from Democrats in Republican districts saying, yeah, no, this is my constituents are not on board with this. Now, I'm in an R+10 district. I'm in an R+15 district and people care about this. And I'm willing to go out and say I support impeachment inquiry. The number as of right now, counting Justin Amash, is 222. So 221 Democrats, more than a majority. You need 218 plus Justin Amash as of this record support an impeachment inquiry. That's significant. Those are Democrats in red districts. Ben Sasse yesterday, Republican senator from Nebraska, again, Republican senator from Nebraska, not a liberal guy and not a Trump gadfly guy either. Right. I mean, just a career Republican said these allegations are troubling. Now, again, there's a long way between.
Yeah,
these
there's
allegations
a lot of
are
people
troubling.
Who are deeply troubled. We're on like level 7 of it. We're now double secret, ultra troubled.
I get that Jeff Flake was troubled a lot. And
yeah,
it didn't,
Mitt Romney.
Right?
Oh, deeply, deeply troubled. They're not just troubled. They're deeply troubled, folks.
I agree. But you're asking for signs, and these are some of the signs.
Atkinson, I wasn't arguing against you. I'm just noting the cowardice of concern. No, there are some Republicans that just, they're going to say as much as they can to like be able to point back to after this is all blown up and this mob boss is out of office. Oh no, all along I was deeply troubled. Don't you see? I contributed so much to the, to the ouster of Donald Trump by my deeply troubledness.
We had a 100-0 vote by the Senate authorized by Mitch McConnell, who we know is perfectly comfortable bottling up anything that he doesn't like, including efforts to increase U.S. cybersecurity to prevent Russia from interfering with our elections. He's okay not having that come to a vote, allowed to come to a vote, and joined in a unanimous Senate in saying that the whistleblower complaint should be released to the House and Senate Intelligence Committees, knowing that we would be where we are today. The only explanation for that is that Mitch McConnell, looking at Kentucky as a Republican plus 16.5 state, right? As somebody who had trouble in 2014 against a candidate who made a lot of missteps in Alison Lundergan Grimes, is looking at his 2020 reelection and going, all right, like there's a bridge too far for Mitch McConnell in Kentucky.
Well, I'll give you a different interpretation. I think he knows what he can and can't do. He knows that sitting on this very obviously illegal, you know, thing of sitting on this complaint, he knows that that is just harder than letting it come out and then saying, oh, this is nothing, which is what he'll do, which is what it is. I don't think it's some like he's worried about, you know, he just knows that that's the way he can play it better, I think.
Yeah, I don't think that that's an implausible reading. But, you know, again, the question is, where are we in terms of
he knows he could be like Lindsey Graham and call it a no quid pro quo burger.
Lindsey Graham, right? I was going to start with Lindsey Graham, right? But Lindsey Graham has already made his political calculation. And this is, again, remember, this is the other definition of the apex of Yodel Mountain. It's the point at which Republicans are more afraid of losing in the general election than they are of being primaried by a pro-Trump, you know, Matt Gaetz type person. Lindsey Graham made that calculation in 2018, right? He said, I'm in South Carolina. South Carolina is going to be a Republican plus 9 state. I stand much more to lose by being primaried. So, you know, time to get down on my knees for Donald Trump. And he has. It's too late for, I haven't used that formulation because, right, it's really too late to primary these folks, but it's the same calculus, right? It is, at what point are Republicans in safe Republican districts going to look at it and go, oh man, there's a limit to how much water I can carry here, right? That they're only, you know, and it is figuring out, right, what percentage of Republicans are in, particularly in their districts, are Republicans, but not, I watch 4 hours of Sean Hannity every day and have Fox News, you know, carved into the inside of my eyelids versus, you know, yeah, I'm a Republican, but I'm not quite that, right? Those are the folks that we can reach. But that today is as optimistic a day as I've been in a long time in terms of where we are Yodel Mountain wise.
Okay. We're somewhere. We're definitely a higher. We know this. We're higher than we were a week ago on Yodel Mountain. So, next item. This is great. This is a next item entitled Boomers Trying to Use Email. sorry, boomers. Is it true, Andrew, that as was reported, and it seems to be true, and I saw it, and it looks legitimate, but I always want to get Andrew's opinion. Seems as though the president's people sent their talking points to Nancy Pelosi?
They did indeed.
Okay. Just making sure that wasn't an Occupy Democrats.
Oh, it's even better than that. Not only did they send their two-page talking points to Nancy Pelosi because a staffer hit reply all, but then the staffer sent out, and various reporters have leaked, the
Please disregard.
The sender has tried to recall this message Gmail, right? Like, as if recalling an email means that you unsee it if you've opened it.
Yeah.
This is super important. We're gonna link the ridiculous talking points in the show notes because you saw them on display in the Maguire hearing, right? It is, and when a right wing hack is repeating these talking points, they should be called out as great. Like, so you're not actually going to analyze this; you're just repeating what the White House literally told you to say, and those people should be shamed. I also want you to put a pin in this because this is the most damning evidence of corrupt intent that we have so far in connection with the Maguire hearings. Multiple place in the talking points we have. I'm going to read the first one. Bullet point. Myth. The president urged President Zelensky to work with Rudy Giuliani to investigate Biden's involvement in securing the firing of a Ukrainian prosecutor 8 times. And 8 times is italicized. Fact. And this is spin, not fact, but it's labeled fact. The president mentioned Rudy Giuliani only after Zelensky mentioned him first and referred to Biden in only one exchange. Okay, so put a pin in that. And again, that appears all over these talking points. Put a pin in that one. I'll tell you when we pull it out.
All right, we will keep an eye on that pin. And next, we're going to finally get to Maguire's testimony. This was a bad day to be on the West Coast and to also go to bed late and wake up late, because by the time I woke up, this whole thing had happened. I didn't even know this was going to happen. So fill me in.
Yeah. So I'm going to get to exactly how devastating this was. Adam Schiff was really, really good today. Lots of congressional Democrats were really good today. And part of the reason for that isn't that these guys have gotten any smarter since the Mueller hearings, right? It's that this case is such a slam dunk. It is so easy that even when you're like politically grandstanding, you can't screw it up. Now, that is not meant to undercut. And I called out on Twitter, Adam Schiff did a masterful job. Other members of Congress did a really, really good job. And some of them were willing to do, you know, sort of the hard work of laying foundational questions. And so I don't mean for that aside to impugn any of the Democrats on the committee. But I do want to draw the contrast, right? Like if you were just an average person, if you're that hypothetical middle of the road voter, I don't know if that person exists or not. Like I said, I usually use my dad as the as the stand-in for that. Like, my dad texted me halfway through and was like, "Are you watching these hearings? Because they're really bad." Right? Yeah. My dad's a registered Republican, but never Trump Republican. Anyone could look at this and know that they're really, really bad. So we're going to talk about how bad it is. I want to flag the 5 arguments that the right wing is making and that were on display at the Maguire hearing that they're going to go nowhere. But, you know, you need to know that they're being made. So point one, the Democrats are being mean to you. And this is all political hackery. That I think was effectively exploded by the Democrats during the hearing, who changed their tone in much the same way that I changed my evaluation of Maguire. Like, when it began, I wasn't sure where he was. By the end of the hearing, like I said, I mean, this is not a Bill Barr level, you know, guy who's willing to take a bullet for Donald Trump. You know, he's made some poor judgments here. And that's precisely the tone that Schiff and the Democrats on the committee took. It's going to neutralize that, I think, as an attack. Number two is the argument that the whistleblower complaint itself is hearsay. That's true, right?
But it 100% might fall true. Within an exception.
Well, it's even better than that, right? Like, hearsay governs what testimony is admissible at trial. Lots of complaints are hearsay, particularly whistleblower complaints, right? So it right So it begins, in the course of my official duties, I have received information from multiple U.S. government officials that the President of the United States is using the power of his office to solicit interference from a foreign country in the 2020 U.S. election. It is responsible to say, I didn't witness all of this behavior myself. I have talked to others with knowledge, and the instant counterargument that the House Judiciary Committee is going to make is, yeah, this absolutely is hearsay. So after we talk to the whistleblower, we're going to want to talk to each and every one of those sources. And the Republicans are going to say, oh, God, we didn't think of that. This is such an own goal. It is the just, and seriously, and that's why I'm flagging it, because I want us to remember and throw it back in their faces when they argue witch hunt, distraction, you know, oh, we've spent blah blah millions of dollars. Like, no, guys, you told us the complaint was hearsay. The way to make it not hearsay is to talk to everybody involved, and for the whistleblower, who I believe 100% in closed door testimony to the House Intelligence Committee is going to reveal his sources, that will then provide the reason to go talk to each and every one of those sources. So that was pretty stupid on their part. next.
I'm so surprised.
Me too. Next was the executive privilege argument. We covered that. I could get into that in more detail, but we covered it. They were basically like, oh, well, you know, this is all we don't want. It was perfectly legitimate for you to go to the president and Bill Barr and ask if it was okay for you to release this complaint. That's nonsense. The argument, I said five, I think I've condensed down. The argument that didn't come up today that is in the telcon, the not quite a transcript, this took me down a total rabbit trail. I don't know if you knew about that. You're more connected in with QAnon level clown hornery than I am. I don't know. I was asking as a question. Do you know, because the president to the head of state, right, to the president of Ukraine mentioned a thing that would strike any outside observer, at least me, as completely insane. Right. Which is congratulations on winning. And then let's talk about the testimony. He says, yeah, congratulations on winning. President Zelensky says, thanks for that. I would like to thank you for your great support in the area of national defense. We are ready to continue to cooperate for the next step. Specifically, we are almost ready to buy more Javelins, those are surface-to-air missiles, from the United States for defense purposes. And then the president, and again, I'm reading this directly, the response to we'd like to buy more weapons for defense from you is, yeah, I would like you to do us a favor, though, because our country has been through a lot and Ukraine knows a lot about it. I would like you to find out what happened with this whole situation with Ukraine. They say CrowdStrike. I guess you have one of your wealthy people, the server. They say Ukraine has it. And I could go through that. And I had no idea what the hell this was referring to.
They have Hillary Clinton's server or something?
It relates to, and I am not making this up, a QAnon level of just complete clown horn insanity that says the Democrats manufactured the entire email. And CrowdStrike was there. Their third party consultant. I'm going to link an article in the Daily Beast. But this is this kind of conspiracy. When I say QAnon level, right? Like I mean that seriously, right? Like this is Pizzagate levels of conspiracy theory, and you have the president of the United States babbling about it to a just elected foreign leader who has to be sitting here thinking, I'm talking to a crazy person. I'm going to include the Daily Beast article that I read. And I was going to say, so you don't have to, but now
I have to read that. Yeah. I'm actually interested.
It's bonkers, right? It is.
Trump actually believes or wants to believe this stuff.
It's not like Yeah, right. Because he's asked them, can you produce the server?
This is a phone
right?
call that he's not doesn't think is going out to the public or anything. It's
right.
not like, oh, he's just trying to stir up whatever. Like, no, he's genuinely asking, do you know, Mr. President of Ukraine, do you know the pizza parlor where Hillary has all the kids? Like, can you tell us like that level of thing?
Yep, that's exactly right. And then that's where he says, I would like to have the attorney general call you or your people, and I'd like to get to the bottom of it. It's whatever you do, it's very important that you do it, if that's possible. That is the leaning on President Zelensky. So those are the arguments. Now, what happened with Maguire? And again, I at the start of the show, I read you the statute. The statute absolutely does not give Maguire the discretion to do what he did in this instance. So what Maguire did was looked at the complaint, said, this appears to involve executive privilege, so I'm going to go to the White House. He did not quite admit that because he invoked executive privilege. And then Adam Schiff said, are you telling me you had a president, you had a conversation with the president of the United States relating to this complaint? And he said, I talk to the president all the time, three times a week. I am not going to divulge the substance of those conversations. Adam Schiff correctly stated the law of privilege. And I really, really want to emphasize this. You can claim privilege related to the subject matter of a conversation, but you cannot claim privilege as to whether that conversation happened in the first place, right? In other words, you have to say, yes, I had a conversation with the president about this complaint, and I will not discuss the substance of that conversation. Maguire would not answer that question, but can be compelled to answer that question. It doesn't really matter. He's not going to be compelled to, because we know, I mean, it was clear from his, you know, it was like, so are you saying you talked to the president? And then he looked up at the screen with that, like, oh, I'm trying to swallow my tongue here. Look, all right. It's 100% clear that he had a conversation with the president. He conceded that he called Attorney General Bill Barr, that he went to the Department of Justice and asked the Office of Legal Counsel, hey, can I turn this over? And shockingly, the Office of Legal Counsel, appointed by Donald Trump under the supervision of Attorney General Bill Barr, said, no, no, absolutely not. That is now their sole excuse for not turning over the complaint. That is not a valid excuse. And as we said at the start, it's not the excuse they were giving a week ago. Adam Schiff was exceptional in this hearing. He got a series of admissions, each more admitty than the last. I love the question again, to which Maguire answered yes. So what you're telling me is you went to the subject of a complaint to ask him if we should release the complaint. Wow. And he was like, well, yeah, but this is unprecedented. I mean, he kept going back to this is unprecedented. And you could just see Adam Schiff being like, right, we've never had a president this corrupt before.
Yeah, but also, like, just because it's unprecedented doesn't mean it's that hard to puzzle out. Should I take this complaint to the person it's about and ask them if it's okay to do stuff with it? Like, I'm pretty sure I could figure out the answer to that despite it not having happened before.
Yep. Yep. And so, right, he said, you're aware that the practice is to forward these complaints to us, right? Yes. And in fact, every previous ICIG complaint that has come through the Office of National Intelligence since its inception, right, since its post, because this is a recent creation, Director of National Intelligence was a position created post 9/11, right? But in the 15 years that your office has been in existence, you always forward them to Congress, don't you? And he said, yeah, I mean, but this is different, right? So that's real bad. Yeah. So it was, and again, there was nothing you could see, right? Like the way in which it works in congressional hearings is you give everybody the same amount of time. Adam Schiff delegated to the ranking member of the Committee of Intelligence, the House Committee on Intelligence, is Devin Nunes, who, boy, watching him just try not to explode was amazing, right? Like, he just had this look of, I've got to continue to keep up the fight here, but it's all crashing down around me.
Well, I didn't get to see it. Did he? I mean, I think their faux outrage has to go in proportion with how screwed they are. You know, did you do the Lindsey Graham? Oh, you people, I hope you never get power. Did he do one of that? Just kind of went
He did, in my view, even better, which was Schiff went first and got 20 minutes of damning concessions. And then Nunes got up and read his sort of pre-written, I just want to warn you, you know, acting director McGuire, like they're going to try and get you to say things.
Like he thought was going first. Right,
right. And you're like, well, that would have been a good thing to tell him 20 minutes ago.
Information would have been useful to me yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right. I could have been told about this yesterday. Yeah. So it was a complete disaster. There was zero way to spin this outside of if you're on Fox News. It's bad. And now we had contemporaneously with the hearing, I got to read it this morning, that we have the actual complaint.
All right. Yeah, just hot off the presses. All right. Well, let's find out more about that in a moment after this break. Opening Arguments is brought to you by Policy Genius. Folks, September is National Life Insurance Awareness Month. Most people aren't aware of that. In fact, most people aren't aware they need life insurance at all. That's why 40% of Americans don't have it. But getting life insurance doesn't need to be difficult or expensive. Listen up, this is something I did for myself, and well, not really for me. It's not at all for me. It's for my family. I made that step because it's very important to me that my family be protected in case something happens to me. You never know. We live in a random world. It's chaos. You never know. I don't want to bum you out, but it's actually a positive thing to have peace of mind every day to know that if cosmically you get a little unlucky or something, your family will be taken care of. They'll have everything they need. And right now, the prices are the lowest they've been in 20 years, and Policy Genius has made it easier than ever to get covered. Policy Genius is the easy way to shop for life insurance online. In minutes, you can compare quotes from top insurers to find your best price. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team will handle all the paperwork and the red tape. And Policy Genius doesn't just make life insurance easy. They can also help you find the right home insurance, auto insurance, and disability insurance. If you need life insurance, but you just haven't gotten around to it, National Life Insurance Awareness Month is as good a time as any to get started. Go to policygenius.com. Get quotes and apply in minutes. You can do the whole thing on your phone right now. Policy Genius, the easy way to compare and buy life insurance. Okay, lay it on us. Is the actual complaint?
This is, as I said, the actual complaint. It is unclassified in the narrative portion. I read some of it to you already. I described the cleverness with which it was drafted. Let me go through again the summary of, and this is, you know, page one, so that everyone understands just how serious this is. Right? I've become aware of efforts by the president to use the power of his office to solicit interference from a foreign country in the 2020 election. The president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, is a central figure in this effort. Attorney General Barr appears to be involved as well. Over the past 4 months, more than half a dozen U.S. officials have informed me of various facts related to this effort. It was relayed to me in the course of official intra-agency business. It is routine for U.S. officials with responsibility for a particular regional or functional portfolio to share such information with one another in order to inform policymaking and analysis. And then there's the caveat. I was not a direct witness, but I found my colleagues' accounts of these events to be credible because in almost all cases, multiple officials recounted fact patterns that were consistent with one another. In addition, a variety of information consistent with these private accounts has been reported publicly. I am concerned that these constitute a serious or flagrant problem, abuse, or violation of law. That's the standard under the statute, which again, I point out that the inspector general found credible. Now, let's go to the specifics. The specifics begin on page two with Roman numeral one. You remember the pin I told you to put in about the talking points?
Got it right here.
Yeah. Pull it out.
Pull it, yank. Yep. I don't know what that sound that makes.
So that the transcript or telcon was of a July 25th phone call from Donald Trump to President Zelensky. This... The complaint notes This was the first publicly acknowledged call between the two leaders since a brief congratulatory call after Mr. Zelensky won the presidency on April 21st. Three things you need to know about that statement. Number one, prior to the release of this complaint, yesterday, the New York Times was reporting that Trump mentioned Giuliani in that call, and again, before the complaint leaked, in that April 21st call. So I'm going to read you from the New York Times reporting from yesterday. And again, this was before they got the complaint. So pretty interesting coincidence. When Ukraine elected its new leader, Vladimir Zelensky, on April 21st, Mr. Trump seized on the moment as an opportunity to press his case. Within hours, Trump placed a congratulatory call as he was en route from Mar-a-Lago to Washington. He urged Mr. Zelensky to coordinate with Rudy Giuliani and to pursue investigations of corruption, according to people familiar with the call, the details of which have not previously been reported. So I want everybody to digest that for a second. Within hours of Zelensky being elected in April, Trump called him up and said, "Hey, I want you to talk to my guy, Rudy Giuliani." That was reported yesterday. The whistleblower did not know that. So when the White House says, "Oh, look at this July 25th call. He didn't mention Giuliani until Zelensky mentioned him first," you might ask the follow-up question, "Well, how the hell did Zelensky know who Rudy Giuliani was?" Right. And the answer was because the last time Trump called him, he said, "I want you to talk to my guy, Giuliani, my fixer." It is 100% incriminating. It is absolutely demonstrates the corrupt intent with which these talking points were sent out of the White House. There's additional corroborating evidence. Footnote 4 on page 4 of the complaint shows that in May, two associates of Giuliani flew out to Kiev to meet with Zelensky's advisors. And on May 9th, Rudy Giuliani, this is from pages 6 to 7, Rudy Giuliani was planning to fly to Ukraine. You may remember that trip was canceled, but Giuliani was going to fly. And then he said, "Oh, well, you know, Zelensky is quote, surrounded by enemies of the president and the United States," end of quote. "So I'm not going to go on my trip." The president was sicking Giuliani on the newly elected president of Ukraine hours after he was elected. So that's part one. That seems pretty bad. Would you believe that it gets worse?
Yes.
Yes. Good belief. Part two. This begins on the bottom of page 3. Yeah. And again, I can't do better than read from the transcript. "In the days following the phone call, I learned from multiple U.S. officials that senior White House officials had intervened to lock down all records of the phone call, especially the official word-for-word transcript of the call that was produced, as is customary, by the White House Situation Room. The set of actions underscored to me that White House officials understood the gravity of what had transpired in the call. White House officials told me they were directed by White House lawyers to remove the electronic transcript from the computer system in which such transcripts are typically stored. Instead, the transcript was loaded onto a separate electronic system that is otherwise used to store and handle classified information of an especially sensitive nature."
Wonder what else is on that illegal email server they have.
Uh-huh. And that is described in the attachment as being code word level classification. And code word level classification, I had to look this up. I had to read through the intelligence manuals to figure it out.
The code word is big orange law breaking idiot president is the code
word. Yes. But it's when you have otherwise, you have highly secret, highly confidential information within an otherwise confidential report, right? So people have access to the whole report, but then there's a special section that you only want a subset of them to see. So you lock down part of that information, you protect it by code word, and you have to know the code word in order to access it. To put this phone call in, we've talked about, and we will talk about in the bonus section, what it takes to demonstrate criminal intent.
Yeah, this.
Hiding your thing is what it takes to demonstrate Let's hide criminal
this
totally. Intent.
By the way, combine that with the fact that Trump, and again, I watched this, and nobody could possibly watch President Trump, I've decided. Sorry to take a second as a sidebar, but I watched his little speech yesterday, I think it was, and it's unwatchable. I think that Republicans don't watch him either, because you can't, nobody could. He's deranged. But he talked about how it's a great call. It was a fantastic call of Ukraine. Totally good. And then he had this thing where he, in one sentence, went from, it was such a good call, I think the Democrats should go after the first call. And then the next sentence made fun of them going after the first call. He's like, they should go after the first call. Oh, I just heard rumors that, oh, they want the first call. Like, it's the weirdest thing. But anyway, the point is, would that add to the evidence? If the president is saying, yeah, great call, everyone should hear it, and these people are saying, let's put it in this double secret ultra probation vault, does that maybe indicate that, like, something's going on? Like, why would this call that's just a normal call that everybody should hear go in this secret, top secret code word thing?
Absolutely. Using the powers of the presidency to declare as classified something that is plainly not classified, you know, plainly doesn't rise to that level of classification, demonstrates the corrupt intent necessary. I mean, would be enough. I should not say it demonstrates the corrupt intent. It's enough to go to a jury, right? To say, hey, look, you could draw that inference, and we want to go to a jury and charge this person with a crime and use this as evidence of corrupt intent, which is what you need for some of the crimes and misdemeanors, which we are going to break down on the additional bonus continuation.
We've run out of time.
We're 70 minutes in. We may go for another hour. I don't know. There's so much I want to do. I want to make sure everybody who's listening to the free version of the show gets the bottom line, which is, this is the blueprint for impeachment. In my view, there will be 5 articles of impeachment that are voted out of the House Committee on Oversight. Those 5, and I'm confident on 4 of them, and I'm up in the air on 1. I think they will be these 5. Okay, a catch-all that the president has acted in a manner contrary to his oath that will follow the Nixon impeachment. Okay,
makes sense.
Illegal solicitation of a campaign contribution.
Stormy Daniels? Or wait.
We're going to talk.
Oh, okay.
Right? C, and this is the only one that I could see going either way, emoluments, right? A violation of the Foreign Emoluments Clause. D, bribery in violation of the anti-bribery statute. And E, obstruction of justice in violation of the obstruction of justice statute. And I will go through each and every one of those. Plus, I'll go through other stuff that it's not. But, you know, we're already at 70 minutes.
Okay. Are you saying that's the bonus section or that's Tuesday? Oh,
that's no, that's the bonus section. And Tuesday, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about what impeachment looks like, because by Tuesday, the wheels will be in motion. And I'm going to tell you what those wheels look like. And I'm going to tell you, I've got some background. Like, I think it's really, really important to talk about, like, exactly how bad this is, because I mean, Ukraine, like, I think a lot of Americans are just sort of like, hey, Ukraine, like this conduct is horrendous for Donald Trump. And I want to make that super clear. So, we got a good bonus, and we got a lot of stuff for the Tuesday episode, and I can't wait to do all that.
All right. Well, since this is still a rapid response Friday, we need to do the things we do every show. I'm excited for the bonus. We'll get to that. But first, we need to thank our first timers, our new patrons for First Timer Friday. And I think I am going first. So I will say, these patrons who recently signed up on patreon.com/law will enjoy all the bonus stuff and the quick return. This is going to be Tuesday's episode, will be available very soon, I promise you. Hopefully, shortly after you're hearing this, because we're going to have Brian edit. We're giving Brian a lot to do, but I think he'll get to this at least at the very latest first thing on Friday. So it'll be ready for you after you hear this. But anyway, join these new patrons this week at patreon.com/law are Matt, Dan Benneker, Tracy Chase, Your Ad Here, Russ Barron, Andrew Bach, Ben Johnson, Claire Sens, Unofficial AOC 2028 Campaign, nice, Petri Dish, and Mark White. Your turn, Andrew.
And thank you to Hedonism Bot. Oh, man, I'm so glad we finally
got that one. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad we finally got him as a patron. It's like dipping my bottom again and again into the finest creams.
A big pledge by Hedonism Bot.
Yeah, right. I expect to see you on the Hall of Fame list. To Bob Reed, to Have You Know, I wrote the strongly worded book on strongly worded letters. That is outstanding. That's a second Futurama reference. To Stephen Rasmus, to anonymous pseudonym Joshua Byrne, Andrew Johnson bribed his way out of being removed. Well, that is super interesting if true. I'm going to take a look at that. Alan Williams, Rick Talbot, Emmy Noether is the greatest mathematician ever. Well, I have no reason to doubt that. And Joshua Stasio, thank you all so much for supporting the show over patreon.com/law. I think you're not going to regret your pledge this week.
And by the way, use that pledge to get discount tickets to the live show, October 12th, LA. If you're anywhere near, come drive down. We're not going to be close. Come do it.
All right. Special guest, Carrie Poppy.
Yeah. And, Carrie's attorney, Matthew, I believe. We'll see how it goes. So, the show must go on. I guess I have to answer a bar question.
You do. And right.
T3BE. Hit it, Brian.
Oh, no associate of this firm has ever failed the bar exam.
Talk to the hand. I need your clothes. That's one of my mission parameters. Trust me. I know now why you cry.
All right, guys, here we go. Let's do it.
Yeah, you're on a two-question winning streak, so I'm here to try and put a stop to that with another real property question. Here we go. Okay. Thomas, a seller and a buyer entered into a contract obliging the seller to convey title to a parcel of land to the buyer in exchange for $100,000. The agreement provided that the buyer's obligation to purchase the parcel was expressly conditioned upon the buyer's obtaining a loan at an interest rate no higher than 10%. The buyer was unable to do so, but did obtain a loan at an interest rate of 10.5% and timely tendered the purchase price. Because the value of the land had increased since the time of contracting, the seller refused to perform. Huh. The buyer sued the seller. Is the buyer likely to prevail? A. No, because an express condition will be excused only to avoid forfeiture. B. No, because the contract called for a loan at an interest rate not to exceed 10%, and it could not be modified without the consent of the seller. C. Yes, because the buyer detrimentally changed position in reliance on the seller's promise to convey. Or D. Yes, because the buyer's obtaining a loan at an interest rate no higher than 10% was not a condition to the seller's duty to perform.
That's interesting. Wow. I don't know. I didn't know you could do this in a contract. Because I feel like I don't know this. I'm not seeing this in any of the answers, but it seems weird to me that your contract would even bother with this because you just get the money. It's not like, you know, it's not like if you default, if the buyer defaults, it doesn't affect the seller because they already have all the cash from the whoever did the loan. So it seems weird that this would matter to them, but I don't know if this will factor in the question. Feels like we're getting a lot of real property lately. Did you save them for when I finally turn around and get on a two-question streak? Provided that the buyer's obligation to purchase. Oh, interesting. Okay. So I kind of missed that the first time around. I was thinking about impeachment. The agreement provided...
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, I know. This might be key. The agreement provided that the buyer's obligation to purchase the parcel was expressly conditioned upon the buyer's obtaining a loan at an interest rate. So this, it sounds more like if the buyer couldn't find one, you know, lower 10 or lower, then they didn't have the obligation to purchase, not that the seller could then say, well, no, I'm backing out. The buyer was unable to do so, but did obtain a loan at the interest rate of 10.5%. okay, so the seller just wants to get out. So I would think the buyer would I'm gonna like eliminate no answers just because the buyer's got to win here. I would hope. Is the buyer likely to prevail? No, because an express condition. No, I don't. The parcel was expressly conditioned. Yeah, but it's just the buyer's obligation was expressly conditioned. Look, if it's a no answer, I'm going to take the loss because I don't think that's right. That shouldn't be a no answer. If the law is that stupid, then I lose and that's fine. And the other no, just to cover it, no, because the interest, because the contract called for a loan at an interest rate not to exceed 10% and could not be modified without consent of the seller. Yeah, I don't think that's right. So I'm down to C or D. Here we go. I feel like this, I've got a chance at this one, it seems like. See, yes, because the buyer detrimentally changed position in reliance on the seller's promise to convey. Interesting. Not loving that one. D, yes, because the buyer's obtaining a loan at an interest rate no higher than 10 was not a condition to the seller's duty to perform. Well, it's got to be that. It's got to be. This is a contracts question, it seems like. I don't even know if this is real property, but sometimes they're similar. I guess there's a blurry line. I am pretty firm on D here. And this is one of those ones where, like, this has got to be it. And if it's not, whatever. I'm not going to go. Sometimes I go against my instincts when I'm not sure, you know, but this one is like, I'm not going to go this far against my instincts. It seems as though it's plainly clear here. The agreement provided that the buyer's obligation to purchase was conditioned on the rate no higher than 10, but the buyer's like, well, I'm still interested. You know, I don't have an obligation, but I'm still going to do it. And so D, yes, because the buyer's obtaining a loan at an interest rate no higher than 10% was not a condition to the seller's duty to perform. So I'm going to go D, final answer, 3-question win streak. There we go. Trump's being impeached and I have a 3-question win streak, and all that is 100%. See you next time.
And if you share Thomas's confidence or want to, you know, burst his balloon, you know how to do that. Just share out this episode on social media. You're going to be doing that anyway, because this, I think, is a pretty good episode. But share this one out. Include the hashtag T3BE. Include your answer, your reasons, therefore, and we will pick a winner and shower that person with never-ending fame and fortune. Fame and fortune not guaranteed.
Oh, wow. All right. Thank you so much for listening. We do, you know, we went extra long, even for normies here. We hope that, you know, we're not trying to hide anything from anybody. We do like rewarding our patrons, but we're definitely not, you know, we want to make sure you got the free version of the show had plenty of stuff, and it did. But this is just so long. We have to go extra for our patrons. There's so much to talk about. Hey, hop on patreon.com/law. Pledge as little as a dollar. Get the bonus stuff. Get Tuesday's episode early. You owe it to yourself. It's some sort of holiday, right? Christmas. Buy it. I don't know. What's on the next holiday? Arbor Day. But you owe it. Do it. Okay. We're going to see you next time. We'll see. It's going to take like 4 or 5 days for normies. Patrons, we will see you right now. And by the way, sometimes, and I think most times when we do a patron extra, the Brian swallows his clown horn button. That's just another selling point. Sometimes he misplaces that clown horn button. We go explicit on the bonus content. Okay, thanks for listening. Share it out, please. We'll see you next time.
You betray the law!
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it'd be a big help if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @openargs. Until next time. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC. All rights reserved.
Opening Arguments is a copyrighted production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, all rights reserved. Opening Arguments is produced with the assistance of our editor, Brian Ziegenhagen, our transcriptionist, Heather Leverage, production assistant, Ashley Smith, and with the generous assistance of our volunteer unofficial researcher, Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our merch and our live shows and also heads up the OA Wiki project. Follow them at OA Wiki. And a big thank you to our Facebook group moderators, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian, and Teresa. Check out the Opening Arguments community on Facebook. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith for creating the fabulous OA theme song, which is used with permission.